Tim, my brother, here we go, man. Back talking podcast. Always a pleasure to do with you. Dude, Barstool Sports has made their first foray into the world of true crime, and this is through the podcast titled The Case. And this is through Kirk Minahan, which is pretty interesting, dude, because Kirk got his start, which I believe for us Philly guys would be like the 94 WIP sports talk show here in the Boston area on WEEI back there. He was a massive morning sports talk show guy, left that outfit, and then got signed by Barstool Sports and started to do a show there. And we'll talk about that a little bit, but I just want to start this off by saying two things. I'm going to jump right to the lead. I'm personally putting The Case at one of the front runner slots is my way too early nominees for best podcast in 2021. I'm all in on this show. There's two elements to me that I'm really captivated by The Case. First off, to me, any true crime story, if it's really going to have some merit and get you hooked in, the initial thing that maybe you're looking at, it turns out to be a whole other thing as well, meaning the more you peel back on the onion, all these crazy layers unfold. And it made me think of the show Shit Town a little bit, Tim, which was in podcast lore, was up there with Serial, one of the most iconic shows back in the day, where this investigative dude went down to this small town to investigate one thing, and the focus ended up being on this entire other thing. There's a little bit of that at play here with The Case, and we'll get into all that. Then the second element is with Kirk himself, sports talk sort of brash. I don't want to say shock jock because that's a lame descriptor, but he's a real sort of out there, unhinged personality, brash, unfiltered style. And he seems to be so passionate about taking on this investigation. And dude, this is not the retelling of a crime. This is a flat out investigation. And he is out in the field chasing leads, doing the legwork. And you can hear almost an urgency from him and how he's going about doing this. But he's also doing it in such a thoughtful, measured way with all the people he's speaking to. And I'm amazed. And I think that's a credit to the internet and distribution. And if people have a goal and something in mind that they want to do in 2021, you can go out and do it. And he's doing that with this offshoot of his own show in Barstool. So I know that was a real long meandering setup. But dude, I'll turn it over to you. What are your thoughts on The Case from Barstool Sports?
Yeah, man, I've been really been getting sucked into the Barstool stuff lately. We reviewed a couple shows here and there, and I've been following Portnoy on Facebook with his pizza reviews and the food app, which I'm totally digging. And then all of a sudden, you know, I'm searching for new podcasts because I think, right, that's what we do here on A Dude and a Bro. And when I saw The Case was from Barstool Sports, right, we text each other. It's like, dude, this is a true crime podcast by Barstool Sports, man. Like, we got to check it out. So that's what we did. And, you know, to be honest with you, I was having kind of true crime fatigue a little bit. Like, you know, there's so many shows and they're all, you know, a little bit similar. Like, everyone tries to be a Payne Lindsay, where they try to solve like a cold case. So I was kind of going in with a little bit of skepticism from that standpoint. But man, I'll tell you, this show had me sucked in. The way that they do each episode and set up the next one is phenomenal. Kirk Minahan does a great job. I didn't know he had this. I think this is sort of like a passion project for him as well, you know, and he does a great job, man. Like, this one has really got me back. It's like stoked, relit the pilot in my oil burner for true crime stuff, man.
Yeah, and to me, sometimes when true crime is about the crazy serial killer, gore, blood, and guts, that almost becomes too much to even wrap your head around. But when you're talking about sort of subcultures and cities and small towns and communities and the neighborhoods and sort of the devious things that can happen in the underbelly of a neighborhood, that kind of stuff, the grit, the characters, that the characters come to life in this series of The Case, and it's all there for the taking. Dude, I know you got a few clips queued up. Maybe if you have the one where Kirk kind of talks a little bit about what he's heard from true crime shows himself and maybe his approach a little bit. I don't know if you have that one at the ready, but let's hear any clip really be fine. But let's start digging into some clips and you and I reacting to them here.
Yeah, no, I appreciate Kirk's like candidness, and like I think that kind of diffused, like, you know, put all my skepticism. It kind of diffused it right out the gate with this comment. Let's listen.
I've listened to, I don't know, hundreds of true crime podcasts and watched hundreds of documentaries. And when you watch them, the one thing that I always try and pay attention to is, does the filmmaker or the podcast host or producer have a natural bias? And oftentimes they do. And that would frustrate me as a viewer. It still frustrates me as a listener or viewer to this day. But I'll admit it, I have a bias. I like Yvette. And when I met Jen's mom, Dottie, I really like her as well. And you can see the anguish in their faces. You can see the heartbreak.
So I don't, you know, this might be controversial here, Michael, but, you know, the iconic Serial podcast where, you know, they go trying to, you know, investigate the Adnan Syed murder in Baltimore. I mean, you know, they don't even admit to this. Like, they are so biased in their approach. Like, they are just desperately trying to prove this guy innocent, that he's sitting in jail for a murder that we don't know if he committed or not. And that really annoyed me about the podcast. At least this one, like, hey, we know, man, he's really trying to solve the murder. He's trying to help this family. He cares about the family. And that's it. That's all I need to know about the show. Now I can watch the show with a lens that I'm comfortable with.
Yeah. And when Kirk comes across something, a piece of evidence or a story or something, he thinks bonker phony, he just plainly states that. He's very dispassionate on one hand in looking at the facts as they come in, but he's clearly on fire for pursuing this story, which I think both things can be true. He's really looking at everything in a cold, just sort of like, you know, analytic way. And when he thinks something doesn't ring true to him, he just plainly states that. And I think that's awesome. And dude, the characters that we meet in here, and I think you and I, out of respect for the audience, because this is a brand new series of The Case, and we don't want to get too far out with spoilers and things like that. But we'll just, I'll just say that it's a disappearance of a girl from a Boston neighborhood in 1989, a troubled girl. She was in her like teens, right, Tim? And she definitely had some struggles in life. Some
16.
Addiction. She was 16. Okay. And dude, there was a comment that someone shared that made it so personal to me when they talked about one of the last nights this girl was known to be out, how she stopped home to grab her Iron Maiden jacket. And I'm a huge Iron Maiden fan. And I don't know, that just warmed my heart to think about this girl going to grab her Maiden jacket and then she ends up missing. But it gets tied to a real interesting character, this guy nicknamed Boston, and some potential to have another crime that was perpetrated 30 years later somehow end up being tied to this initial girl's missing from 1989. I don't think we need to go too much crazy beyond what I just said right there, but Kirk goes all over South Carolina, into these neighborhoods, all over Boston, interviewing family members. They do freedom of information petitions, if I heard right. I mean, they try and get all the police documentation. They talk to detectives. And I mean, this is an exhaustive. Well, yeah, go right ahead, man.
I was going to enter. I wanted to just pump the brakes a little bit,
yeah,
from where you're going. Yeah. So like the first episode, like we're sucked into this Boston town and, you know, Barstool Sports and Portnoy, you know, like you're thinking, you know, Boston. And, you know, to be honest, I got a little Boston fatigue too. Like anytime,
well, we're Philly, like, guys, man, I mean, that's
maybe you're right. It's like, I'm still mad about Dr. J and, versus Larry Bird and, Kevin McHale. But, right, anytime Hollywood portrays like a working class blue collar town, like they automatically go to like Boston as like the quintessential like working class like white community, which sort of annoys me. But this is legit, man. Like this, you're going into like legit working class Boston neighborhood, and I want to play a clip because they're talking about Jennifer and like her behavioral problems she was having as a teenager. And it doesn't get any more Boston than this. Let's listen here.
My mom had to actually at one point put a chins on Jen because she wouldn't go to school. And
she had to do what?
They had to put a chins on her.
And this is what I mean from coming from the same state, but from a different world. When she said chins, you know, if you hear my reaction, I sound confused by it because I didn't know what it was.
So I love that, man, because like a terminology, you know, the accent is thick and like that really like, all right, now I'm like creating a mental picture in my mind of what's going on. So then, right. So it takes you from this working class Boston neighborhood. And at the very end of the first episode, without spoiling too much, you know, you find out that the last person that she's been seen with or witnesses or is this guy, Kevin Mailer, that she was with at a party. And they set up episode two with this kind of reveal. And they really get the hook in. You want to listen to the hook
here? Let's do it, man. Absolutely. All right, man.
Kevin Mailer is a person of interest due to a video that's out there.
This has changed and indeed accelerated the way we are going to tell you this story. Jennifer Faye went missing in 1989. Faith Roach went missing 30 years later. We're headed down to South Carolina to search for the man who may have the answer to the question, what happened to the missing girls?
So, right. And that's how you're left off with episode one. You're like, oh, man, I want episode two. They do a great job of piecing that together and putting the hook into it, man.
It's intense, dude. And by the way, out of all the characters covered in true crime, Kevin Boston, his nickname, Mailer, one of the top 10 all time, just sort of nefarious dudes. I mean, it is crazy all the stuff he's up to. And I want to give the production here credit and Kirk credit, because there's a lot of kind of players coming in and out of it. And he always does a great job of sorting, hitting pause after a clip, doing just sort of a mini recap to let you know maybe why they play that, why that was important, where it's heading to. He really weaves everything together where at moments I'm like, am I about to get lost and not understanding? But he always brings you back to keep you on track. And there's been at times with other true crime shows where it's dizzying and I can hardly keep up in an audio only experience. They keep you plugged in and right on track. And that's a credit to him as a facilitator of this series.
That's an excellent point, Mike. You are 100% spot on, because yes, I had the same, like, I don't know if the awareness to be able to do that, if that's all Kirk or the producers to go back, but to have the awareness of like, you know, perceiving it from the listener's, you know, point of view as a listener, and to be able to go back and do that, like you said, is definitely a credit. That is definitely a positive of this show, man.
Yeah, absolutely. So, dude, let's just think about this real quick, and then we can put some parting thoughts on this. You know, I had no idea what to expect when I heard Barstool was putting out true crime. You know, whether you're in on the brand of Barstool or not, the one thing you can't deny is that Portnoy and that whole crew do nothing but hit home runs. If you're not sort of the intended audience and you don't get it, that's one thing, but you can't deny the prolific output of content that those guys create and just constantly hit home runs in what they do. You and I did BFFs, which was a crossover with Portnoy getting into the TikTok world, which just sounded bizarre, but it works so well. And I constantly tune back into clips of that show on YouTube. I'm keeping up with it, which I don't often do with a lot of the show's review. So when it came to them putting out a true crime, I did not know what to expect, especially when it was coming from Kirk Minahan. You know, I listened to Kirk's show when it first started. I want to say it was around like the warm weather of 2019. When I Googled to prep for this a little bit, I think they said he started in May of 2019. My recollections of listening to the first few episodes when he got on with Barstool, I remember it being warm weather because I would step outside of my corporate office to listen to it a little bit. And I was fascinated by his style. He was definitely a mix it up kind of guy. Him and Portnoy were having beef right when he came, like he had just signed a contract, got on with Barstool, and those guys were beefing. And you almost wonder if there's a little bit of WWE quality to it where they're kind of ratcheting that up. But it felt real to me. It didn't feel, you know, kind of being trumped up. And it just, knowing that that is what his wheelhouse has been, and that's been kind of his personality and brand of broadcasting, to hear what he's doing in this platform and just kind of the credibility I think he's lending as a communicator and a broadcaster through this outlet of a true crime show, I'm highly impressed, and I'm absolutely going to keep it in my podcast feed. There's often times where I review a show, I might be into it, but then it's out of my feed and we move on. I'm hanging in here because A, I got to see where this ends up. I'm fascinated by the characters. And B, I just think it's so cool to see Minahan exploring sort of a passion piece. And I want to kind of go along with him in that journey. What's sort of your wrapping up thoughts here on this, man?
Well, let me take that point a step further, dude, because you had suggested Minahan to me in the past, I remember. And I just, you know, I'm very funny with my podcast. I'm very particular. And I just couldn't, you know, and to be fair, I didn't really give it a shot. You know, I tried. But to the credit, when I listened to this podcast, like I knew of Kurt Minahan because of Barstool and what you had told me in the past. But if I didn't know anything about the guy, if I didn't know he was a sports guy or a Barstool guy, I would have thought he was like an executive producer for Dateline or 2020. Like he's a great true crime host, man. Like he's a professional, dude. It's excellent.
Yeah. And dude, I just want to kind of clarify my perspective as well. Like, I'm not even necessarily a Kirk Minahan fan. And I don't mean that to be derogatory or critical of him at all. Like I don't really listen to his show. I never knew of him as a Boston sports guy. I just knew kind of what his brand and the style of show he did, which is why I'm all the more impressed with what he's doing through this platform of the case. And I hope true crime community, it's pretty heavy female centric. And I hope that they don't see the Barstool brand and either keep it at arm's length or write it off, because anyone in the true crime community, I feel, would latch onto this immediately because it is a legit as true crime offering can be. It's got all the great hallmarks, twists and turns, interesting story, peel the onion. There's something else behind door two, the kind of drama, the investigative piece. It's all there. So I hope people who are maybe not into the Barstool lane don't write it off because of that, because they should give it a shot on the merit of just being a legitimate true crime offering.
100%. And, you know, we didn't want to, before the show, we sort of talked like we didn't want to give too many spoilers because there's twists and turns. And I mean, you know, they're three or four episodes in by the time we're recording this. And like after every end of episode, they introduce like some new bit of information or where the investigation goes. And it's just more insane and outrageous than the last one. The people, the characters, the story. So it's like, I'm in for the journey, man. Like, I just cannot wait to find out where this investigation leads, man. So yeah. I'm in, dude.
I mean, dude, I'll just say to your point, there's a matriarch of a family in Boston that we get introduced to. That's all I'll say. And
wow.
It is, my goodness, it's what is going on in the world out there. I mean, it is just...
Let me ask you a question, because like a lot of like it took me back, you know, I'm not, you know, I came from like a Philadelphia suburb community, but there was the one house in our neighborhoods, in our house. It was a townhouse. It was a row home, nothing special, but it was the one house where like all the trouble went down. There was the one bad kid, and there was the parents that were flaky, and like every 3 months the cops would be there, and you just kind of knew not to go to that house, or you just knew as a kid, just like there was something not right. Like that's how I got those feelings, like kind of from this story. It was like there's the one just bad, you know, bad things go on in that house, and I could totally just sense that, get that feeling from the show, and you know, from some of the characters in the show. I don't know if you have any experience like that.
Dude, every old school, like suburban city neighborhood has that home or two in the area where you just know there's bad news emanating out of that house. There's no doubt about it. Dude, question for you. This is going off topic a little bit, but Boston, are they more a kinship to us than rival, really? Because I feel like we both hate New York in common, and we kind of are almost like siblings in an odd way, or maybe cousins. Are you feeling me on that? Because I know I hate the Celtics, I hate the Patriots, but it's there's almost like a respected kinship between us versus New York. I utterly hate. And by the way, I'm talking in sports hate. I don't mean the people in the city. Don't get me twisted. I'm talking from a sports market town rivalry base. New York, I give no respect or credit to. Whereas, the Larry Birds and Brady, I don't know. Am I off? Is it all hate for you, or do you see where I'm going with this?
No, man, I think you're right. I think we have more in common than we have differences, and we should unite around our commonalities.
Absolutely. And by the way,
than our differences.
Yeah, you know? I had a beautiful night in Fenway one night watching Pearl Jam play there. So it was a magical, mystical night for me. So I got a real soft spot in my heart for Boston, especially after that evening. So, dude, all right. Oh, by the way, I think you might have another clip. Why don't we get into another clip as a real parting shot here, and then we'll put a bow on it and wrap this up as far as the a review of the case here.
Yeah, so to set this up, if you were a local in the neighborhood, you kind of sort of knew what was going on. Like, you knew who the bad actors were. You knew who the players were. And what's mind-boggling about this case, and, Kirk kind of hammers home this point, is, like, the local authorities, like, to not have any sort of clue. Like, it was pretty obvious they were inept at doing their job. And I this investigator that was assigned to the case, I don't want to rag on her. You know, maybe that she had an over, she probably didn't have the resources and maybe was overworked. But here is the original investigator and what her theory of the case was based on her investigation. So we'll listen.
And then I get a call from a friend of mine that was in the Secret Service. He was in Florida. He called me up. He said he had just interviewed a prisoner on another case. So he said that the kid had brought up, he gave him the story of how he came down to Brockton. He picked this girl up and he gave the name Jennifer. And he was on his motorcycle and they took off and they went to California.
I'll be very clear. I don't find that story believable.
So, right. So the local authorities' theory of the case was there was some stoolie in Florida who told some Secret Service agent that he picked up a girl named Jennifer around the time she went missing and they went to California. And to kind of like put a bow on it, they go to California and they get another person who says, I picked up a hitchhiker who said that she was Jennifer and, she's fine. She's just living with like a biker gang in like Fresno or something, case closed. And, for them to like kind of go off of that is sort of mind boggling. And, Kirk Menahane, as an amateur investigative journalist, like uncovers way more in 4 hours than the police could at the time is kind of mind boggling.
And I think he also draws out the distinction of what type of cases make it to Dateline NBC, sort of the wealthy suburban college girl who's on a vacation and goes missing, where that gets just national attention, versus a girl from a, rough, lower to middle class area in Boston, teenage girl. And there's just hardly even a blip on the radar of the media when she goes missing. And just right to your point, what kind of resources were really poured into looking at this? What kind of attention? And it sounds like maybe not at all. So it's fascinating that here we are all these years later that a podcast from an independent outfit, Barstool, is going to attack this case and what could potentially come out of it. And I'm in for the ride, man.
Yeah, me too. So this was a good one, man. So I'm glad that this one popped up and I'm glad that we had a chance to talk about it, man.
Yeah. So guys, the case from Barstool Sports, again, if you've ever found Barstool to be off-putting, none of that element is in this. This is a tried and true true crime production taken on with some real, not journalistic integrity, but I'd say almost like an investigative integrity by a guy who's not claiming to be an investigator or anything like that. This is a true passion piece for him. But man, he really goes at it in a way that's commendable. And he's not, turning down any lead or afraid to go into any area or approach anyone to talk to them. There's incredible audio clips of interviews, and it's just it's fascinating. So do check it out. The case from Barstool Sports, put on, created by Kirk Menahane. Tim, any final parting shots from you as we wrap here?
Yeah. So I know if you're like a true crime buff, and did you ever listen to Up and Vanish, Mike? Did that ever?
The familiar.
So that's kind of an iconic true crime podcast where like an amateur guy, Payne Lindsay, and like his cousin or brother, they go down to Georgia for a cold case. And they end up solving it, dude, like as the podcast goes on, because like they're stirring up the locals like on social media. They're calling like suspects and they like flush out the actual killer, which is great. And this show has that, man, these elements to it. And it's very Up and Vanish like. So that's my final point there.
Awesome, man. Well, Tim, that was a fun one. Always a pleasure talking podcast with you, my friend. And I'm already looking forward to the next one, brother.
Yeah, man. Later.
This episode of A Dude and a Bro podcast is brought to you by the fine folks at Podcorn. As you guys know, we love listening to and talking about podcasts. As podcasters ourselves, we understand the time and energy that goes into getting the right equipment, finding the time to record, and just the daily grind of promoting the show. There are hard costs to building a show, and monetizing your work is a critical component of growth. Enter Podcorn, who is disrupting the traditional and frankly outdated paths to sponsorships. Podcorn is a user-friendly marketplace connecting podcasters to amazing sponsorship opportunities such as host read ads, interview segments, topical discussions, and more. At podcorn.com, you can get started with a user-friendly interface where you can easily browse potential sponsors. Podcorn gives you the flexibility to collaborate with these sponsors and choose the right opportunity that fits the size and scope of your show, and you never give up any rights to your podcast. Click on the link in our show notes to sign up to Podcorn and start browsing sponsorship opportunities right now. We want to give a big shout out to Podcorn. Thanks to Podcorn, A Dude and a Bro can continue to focus our energy and efforts on creating content for you and talking about the podcasts we love. Go to www.podcorn.com today to get started. That's www.podcorn.com. Later.
We are A Dude and a Bro podcast show. We are entrenched in podcasts. We want to do for the world of podcasting what Siskel and Ebert did for movies back in the day. So we love doing reviews of our favorite podcasts. We love suggesting new shows to all the fine folks out there in the world. And then Tim and I love debating topics from the latest and greatest episodes of our favorite podcast shows. Hey guys, you would do us a huge favor if you could head over to podchaser.com. Podchaser is your one-stop shop for all things related to podcasts and your favorite podcast shows. Search A Dude and a Bro podcast show and then leave us a review. If you could take a moment to drop a few lines about what it is you enjoy about A Dude and a Bro podcast show over on the Podchaser site, we'd be eternally grateful for your support. Thanks so much, guys.